Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good, you?
Good. Great to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours.
You know,
We haven't seen each other in a while.
Yes.
Let's see, was it yesterday?
Yesterday? Or the day before?
Day before.
Yeah. Many blessings when I see you regularly.
I like it myself. I thought a very, very fun retreat in Felton.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, and I think they're going to do that again. Jenny and Paul, who are the owners of Namaste, that beautiful space, and they open it up to us, and the whole thing is a fundraiser for Living Compassion. And so I will let you know that we made $10,000.
Wow.
For the program in Cantalamba this weekend.
Wow.
So it's a wonderful thing to be able to go and be together and do our little personal growth thing and have lots of insights and be with wonderful people and also have the kids come out such winners.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about win-win.
Win-win. Yeah.
Yes.
Very fun.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it was a great weekend. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So speaking of those kids.
Yes.
Have you been following the blog?
Yes, and I have to tell you that a moment ago, I saw that another blog had been posted just very recently. So I'm going to promise you I'm not going to look at it till after the show, though I'm very tempted.
You are practicing some serious restraint here.
Yes.
Because you are an admitted blog junkie.
I am. I, and now there's a feature. You can subscribe to this blog, and so your computer and the internet will tell you when there's a new one there.
That's funny.
I tell you, even when it doesn't tell me, I still check.
Because what if it's wrong?
Because what if it's wrong?
Yeah, what if it missed something and there you are? Well, it is just a I was thinking about this morning. I'm on my way to North Carolina for a retreat in Asheville or just outside of Asheville for the next 10 days. And Dave is actually, I think, on an airplane right now winging his way to North Carolina to meet me there. And start the retreat, and I'm supposed to be writing my 20th email. You know, the few years ago, this wonderful woman complained, as she should have, that we're not always as clear as we might be about what the heck it is that we're doing.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're going off in some direction, and people are thinking, "What? When? how did that happen? When did that get decided?" And so, I committed to sending an email out to the Sangha every month, trying to keep up. Now, since then, of course, we've made great strides in every direction to keep people informed about what we're doing because everybody's really busy. It's a very fast life, and it's a fast life for us, too. So things
yes.
are changing all the time. So I was looking at it today and thinking about what it is that in life that makes me happy. So I'll tell you this, and then other people will hear this, too. We haven't actually said this out loud anywhere, but I am in the process of turning over the operation of Living Compassion and the Zen Center to Dave and Jen, because each one of them is kind of in charge of a big part of the organization. And so to just, instead of having them be in charge of it and me be in on the day-to-day running of everything, I've just said, okay, folks, you know, goodness knows you're well-trained and ready to take this on. And so that'll be, the next phase of your practice, and they're willing and, in fact, very excited about it. And then I'll be freed up to do more of the things that I might be interested in doing right now. And so that's given a lot of you know, a lot of opportunity to say, okay, well then, what is that? What would I like to do?
Yeah.
And what I came up with is the common denominator in everything that I'm interested in doing is participation.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, there is nothing in this life more fun than getting together with nice people that you like to do interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And that, so that's what everything we do kind of has in common right now.
Yes.
Yeah. And so looking at just being able to do more of that with great people who are fun to be with and who like to participate because it makes life more fun.
I have to say that's my experience as well.
Yeah, yeah. So whether we're, you know, down in Felton for the weekend or we're back in North Carolina or we're over in Africa or we're here at the monastery doing something, you know, putting in the gardens because it's that time of year or, you know, painting the fences or whatever it is that we're doing, to be able to do something that you feel good about, that you enjoy doing with people that you like, you know, to do something that you enjoy and find meaningful. I just don't think there's anything better in life.
Think of anything. I have to tell you. And to me, the beauty of practice, being trained in that way towards participation, you know, it's just so valuable wherever I go.
Yeah.
There's not a moment in my life that I can't participate where I am.
Yes, in something that somebody's doing.
Yeah, whether it's my work or my family or walking down the street.
Yeah. Yeah, I go back to that, my favorite Thich Nhat Hanh thing. I'm sure he said many, many wonderful things since, but this remains my favorite. Where he was, the young man was complaining that he had, I guess he just recently started a family, and he felt like he had no time for himself. You know, he had to go to work, and then his wife wanted attention from him, and his child wanted attention from him, and he had all of these chores that he needed to do, and he just didn't feel like there was any time for him. And so Thich Nhat Hanh encouraged him to consider that time at work is time for him, and time with his wife is time for him, and time with his child is time for him. And so when we look at it in that way, of course, then everything in life, every minute is giving to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
And I'll have to stretch my imagination with that particular example, but I'll work on it.
Uh-huh. Well, at the retreat this weekend, as you know, I was talking about being very fired up about wanting to make a difference in the world in terms of global climate change and that sort of thing, and my admitted obsession with plastic. And so just I thought, well, that would just be such a fun thing for a Sangha to take on. You know, all of us getting together and deciding what is it that we want to do. Do we want to, you know, try to rid the world of plastic, or do we want to try to come up with an alternative to plastic that isn't going to kill us all and our children and their children? You know, what is it that we would like to do that would bring us together, that would be fun and exciting, and at the end of the day, you know, if the voices kick in and say blah, 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 you can just say, no, actually, you know, I've spent my day making a difference. And so you don't get to beat me up because I have concrete proof that I'm a good person.
Yes.
So that's, I'm going to invite people when I do the 20th email, and it'll be coming out in the next couple of 3 days. I want to invite people to participate in that way. And I hope people will be, well, maybe not as excited about it as I am, but enthusiastic anyway, and open to jumping in, because I was telling somebody recently, this North Carolina retreat that I'm leaving for, it feels like a family reunion. I go down through the list of the people who are going to be at the retreat, and so many of them I've been practicing with for years. And
yes.
It's just, it's like a family reunion. You know, you have all your cousins and aunts and uncles that you don't get to see very often, and they're all going to gather together in one place, and it's just a big party.
That's often my experience on retreat as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. Sherry, is there any other good news, Africa, other stuff that you want to share before we head to the callers?
Well, I don't think so. I think everything in Africa, as people will be, you know, following, is just going beautifully. And we're all lined up for the next trip. And then, you know, increasingly from here on out, we're going to be able to be taking more and more people with us. And that is a fun thing. And so, you know, we've got we're gearing up for the bridge walk. I think people are finding little messages in their inbox, invitations to participate in the bridge walk, another kind of family reunion, and like that. So I'm sure there are a lot of things, but I can't think of them right now. Do you have any that you've?
Yeah, I did. One thing does occur to me as you ask me, and that is that I got an email from Living Compassion, I think it was today or yesterday, about some more of the new cards that support the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Yes, lots of new cards.
Yes, and highlighting Mother's Day in particular, which is coming up soon.
Yeah, and one that somebody who participates, who likes to send the cards, suggested a gift pack of them. And so we're actually going in that direction, too. So a person can order a variety of cards and just have them at their home.
Yes.
And then when an occasion arises, instead of having to go on to the website and do all of that sort of thing, they can just pick one out of the gift pack and send it off. So,
wonderful.
Yeah, lots of fun things.
Wonderful. Great.
Yep.
Sherry, we have a couple callers, and let me give out the phone number here also. That phone number is toll-free in North America. That's 888 for Sangha. And if you turn that into numbers, you get 888-472-6442. And we'd love to hear from you today. Okay, you ready, Sherry?
I am.
Okay, we have our next caller. And could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George from Pennsylvania.
Hey, George.
Hey, Sherry. Michael.
I'm getting ready to come your way pretty soon, too. I'm excited about that.
I know. Yeah. I will be seeing you there.
I'm looking forward to it. What's
going
on?
I've never been there before, and I'm looking forward to it.
You've never been to the Pittsburgh retreat?
No, to the Integral Yoga Institute.
Oh, you're coming.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the Pittsburgh retreat this year, and I was back and forth about it, and there was a couple other things that I wanted to do at the same time, and
so
I decided
not to. So you're coming to the Big Apple.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on in your world?
Well, things are going very well. Not according to conditioning.
No.
But, you know, there's always something wrong and not enough. But
absolutely.
But
if you ask conditioning.
If I ask conditioning, I can always count on an answer of that nature.
Yes.
but in the reality, I choose to, you know, your quote that I often say to myself, you know, the quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention. I found, you know, I finally just got that.
Uh-huh.
Like, yes, just change the focus of my attention.
Yes.
And bring it back to the present moment, bring it back to, you know, what's right in front of me right now, kind of like, you know, you were talking about Thich Nhat Hanh's your favorite Thich Nhat Hanh thing. It's just that it's already there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I need in my life is right here in the present moment.
Yeah.
I don't have to look. I don't have to. And it's only through wishing I was somewhere else that it's not there.
Yes, that you miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fun because when you know when you say I just got that, you know, there's a the conditioning wants to say, well, what in the heck were you doing? Because it's not exactly complex.
No, it's not complex.
As soon as you see it.
As soon as you see it.
But boy, until you see it, it is just gibberish.
Oh, it was gibberish for a long
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Congratulations, because that will that'll change a lot, won't it?
Oh, it has.
Mm-hmm.
It has changed a lot. Yeah, and it seems like a pretty permanent change, you know. I mean, not that I don't get you know, my energy sucked away or get dragged down occasionally by self-hate or conditioning. But as soon as I, it takes me much less time to wake up and remember that and just change my focus. Just stop
mm-hmm.
listening to that story, stop living in that story, and go live where I want to live.
Yeah, yeah,
And it's not hard.
It's not hard. It's not. In fact, you're laughing because it's actually fun.
It's fun, yeah.
I hear myself say that so much. I use the word fun a lot. And I think that's not unlike the quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention. Until you have the experience of it, it seems a little nonsensical.
Yeah.
Because it's a world of suffering. What is fun about it?
Right.
And if you're having fun, you're probably not paying attention and just might be a little on the shallow side.
Right.
And then when you move into that place and get it that, oh, life is fun. Conditioning.
Well, yeah,
is fun.
And you really and also it's such a miracle. I mean, every moment, every breath is literally a gift.
Mm. That's going to be gone way too soon.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you got it.
I do have a couple of questions.
Uh-huh.
One is, and this may be more in the direction of Michael, actually, is I want to graduate to a vibrating wristwatch.
Uh-huh.
I want to take one of those on. I can see how useful that device would be. And I'm just wondering if you or Michael have any recommendations of where to buy such a thing, or I've been looking.
Michael,
I have found some things on the internet, but
Michael,
sure.
Do you still have yours?
Sure, I do have mine. I'm not using it regularly, and it's very good. And if you Google VibraLite,
VibraLite,
yeah, LITE, you'll come up with some watches, and there's a variety of models. And I think the most recent one is VibraLite 5 or 4 or something.
Oh,
like
okay.
That. Yeah.
Okay. Great. That's what I needed. The other question I had was, one of the places that conditioning or self hate really does still get me is in sleep.
Uh-huh.
I find that I have these dreams that are really, you know, replays of states of mind that are just pretty awful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just totally. Self-hate, conditioned, egocentric stuff that I've lived so much of my life
mm-hmm.
In that state that it and it comes up and I wake up, and if I can remember the dream, then I'm able to kind of circumvent the wake of the dream, so to speak, the kind of emotional psychological
mm-hmm.
damage that the dream
the
has left in its wake.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes when I can't remember it, it's more difficult. And I have, you know, I have my practices in the morning that usually get me you know, fairly well back on track, but still there's this residue of just kind of I don't know exactly, but you know what I mean.
I do. It's like it's like there's just a almost like the vibration remains in your system.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the practices that you do probably go a long way toward removing it. And I think that that's where the concentration needs to be. I was telling somebody the other day, I was encouraging him to just get out of bed and do jumping jacks.
Well, I know that you had talked before about a process that you went through when you were a student of getting up regularly during the night and actually getting out of bed and going outside and you know, looking at the stars and so on, and then coming back and going back to sleep and getting up 2 hours later and
And, of course, you know, people should take that sort of thing on if they want to, never as a should.
Yeah.
I think it's a very fun, to me, a very fun practice.
Uh-huh.
It has tremendous benefits. You know, the whole thing that it does with your sleep cycle, which is wonderful, but also just what it's like to be up at that time of night. Of course, I've always lived in the country, so, you know, I get the stars and the moon and all of that sort of thing in a way that sometimes people don't get as much so in the city. But it's just it's a great way to practice kind of having a sense of conscious awareness around the clock rather than I'm practicing being present and aware, and then I go to sleep for whatever period of time, and I don't know what happened, and then I wake up, and here I am in this different state, and it just begins to be continuous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely interested in possibly trying. I mean, how do you get into that rhythm?
Oh, well, you just set your alarm.
You just set your alarm.
Yeah, and for the first, if you're like me, for the first couple of weeks, you're going to be convinced that you're going to die. Because we have so much stuff about the amount of sleep that you need and what that has to look like. But, you know, very quickly you realize that, no, in fact, you're not going to die and that sleep is more a conversation than anything else, and we, you know, if we get tired, we do go to sleep, and and once the body and the mind adjust to that rhythm, then it everybody's perfectly happy doing it.
So it's every 2 hours.
Every 2 hours.
Every 2 hours.
Yep.
And do you still do that, or?
I don't set an alarm, but I do wake up all night long.
But just you've gotten into the habit
of it.
I
like it very much.
Yeah.
I have no fear of not getting enough sleep. And so you know, it's just it's pleasant. It's pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that I have a lot more life as a result of it. Okay,
yeah.
So we'll try it.
Maybe
I
will.
Let us know what you find out.
All right.
Give us an update on the watches, too.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, George. See you soon.
All right, see you soon.
Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, are you ready for another caller?
Yeah.
Okay. Next caller, would you please introduce yourself?
This is Berus from Sweden.
Oh, hello.
Hello. It was a year ago I called.
My goodness.
And I'm reporting back, really. That's why I'm telling you.
Good. What's been going on?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but I suppose others who are listening don't remember, but I had been meditating for 7 years, and every time I sat to meditate, I had these enormous tensions and very, very strong bodily sensations.
Uh-huh.
And you encouraged me to sit with that and to see it as a heroic effort, really, to
mm-hmm.
be free from suffering.
Uh-huh.
And that was a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Well, lots of things happened this year, and really what has happened that I've got a little more clarity instead of fighting against these enormous tensions. What I have realized is that my suffering really doesn't depend on these tensions. I can't control these tensions. I don't know where they come from. I can't make them go away.
Yes.
But my suffering is due to a part of me that believes these voices that tell me that these sensations are wrong, that it's my fault that it's happening,
uh-huh.
because I'm doing something wrong.
Uh-huh.
And they tell me, as long as they're there, you can't be happy.
Uh-huh.
And this, I'm beginning to see that this is the source of my
yes.
suffering.
Yes.
And since I can't control these things, they might just as well tell me, well, the problem are the mountains, just move them.
Exactly.
I can't do that. I can't do that.
That's right.
So,
and if you never heard another word from those voices, you mm-hmm. wouldn't have any problems.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Don't you love it?
What I have seen also is that this is really a content. That the real process has been going on all my life. It's
yes.
these voices telling me that everything is my fault.
Right.
Everything that happens is my fault because I've done something wrong. Even if my friend is depressed, it's somehow my fault. You know?
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm always doing something wrong. And my response to this, or what response of part of me to this, has been to either try to please them
mm-hmm.
Or try to convince them that I'm not doing anything wrong by kind of comparing myself with others, reading books, like that, or trying to escape them.
Mm-hmm.
None of them worked.
None of it worked.
it just became a struggle.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is that it was this same process when I was working that it caused me so much suffering that I had to stop working. I had to take a leave of absence because I couldn't continue working. And during that leave of absence, I discovered this pause.
Aha.
So in some way, I'm grateful to these voices.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the, you know, when Gandhi and Krishnamurti and folks like that were kind of famous for talking about all of this as a worthy opponent.
Right.
It drives you to find something better. Drives
right.
you to find a way to end your suffering.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I really needed that because, you know, I was all work, and, you know, I was completely unaware of everything.
Yeah.
My family, I was unaware, so I needed that real big kick.
Yes, yes.
Kind of to wake up.
Yes, which is very clear to us when we get toward the other side.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, and this, you know, something that's like that is when people have a life-threatening illness,
mm-hmm.
and it's horrible. It is legitimately horrible for them. And
mm-hmm.
then they get to the other side of it, and they say, you know, I don't ever want anything like that to happen again. And I'm so grateful that it happened because it caused me to wake up. I started to pay attention. I began to value life. I appreciate my relationships. You know, I'm awake. I'm aware in a way
right.
that I wasn't before. And so I'm grateful for anything that made that happen.
Right, right. And these tensions that I have, really, I'm now beginning to think that, well, I can be happy despite of these tensions. I don't... And thing about them is that they're always with me. You know, it's like a portable gym.
Exactly.
Anytime I sit to meditate, they come. So
exactly, exactly. Friends who never forget you.
Yeah, right. So I can always practice.
Yes, and you know the thing about it is, you know, those of us who are relatively healthy and that sort of thing, you know, we forget that there are a lot of people in the world who are required to find happiness in circumstances that we would consider perhaps intolerable.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, but they don't have a choice. It's not, they can't say, I'm just not going to be happy because, I mean, certainly they could do that. But for instance, I'll give you for instance, my father was blinded when he was 30 years old. He had a brain tumor, and when they operated on him, they touched the optic nerve and left him blind. Well, here he was. He'd been married for 4 or 5 years. He had 2 small children, and suddenly he's blind. And he was a bright, capable fellow, and so he recovered. He had a lot of other damage that was done as a result of the surgery, but he, you know, he really didn't have much choice. You know, he had a family, and so he, you know, he did what he needed to do to rehabilitate himself. Well, when I was growing up, I was always his eyes, and on more than one occasion, I heard people indicate that for them, they thought that he would be better off dead than blind. And of course, it's a, you know, it's just, it's an absurd notion, because of course he didn't, he never once thought, oh, I would be better off dead than blind. It was just the life challenge that he had, in the same way that somebody else who lost their legs or whatever what might have happened in a person's life. You know, it becomes the thing that we work with, and we are then obligated to find happiness, peace of mind, well-being, however we want to talk about it, in those circumstances.
Right.
Yeah.
So I
here
can consider myself very lucky, really, because I haven't got any terminal disease or it's really a very good thing that happened to me. I should be grateful really to it.
Yeah. And again, with the, you know, being very clear that we don't want it to happen again. Right? So it's not a, you know, it's not a masochistic, aren't I lucky?
Nah,
you know, I hope something even worse happens to me so that I can grow even more. And that's not the point. Yeah.
No, I'll be very happy when they're
right.
gone, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is funny. Thank you.
Yeah.
All
and
right. Well,
what I really want to say is that during this period, the teachings, the meditation, but something that's been really most important to me has been this radio show.
Oh.
And all these people, all these wonderful people who have called, if they only knew, if they only knew how much help they have been to me. Maybe they don't realize that, really. But I don't know, I almost identified with all of them somehow.
Yes.
I don't know, everything that everybody said applies to me.
Yeah, it's the beauty and wonder of Sangha, isn't it?
Yeah, but I just like to say that all these, because, I'm really grateful to you and I'm to Michael, and but these people who call, they're so important.
Yeah, and now I'm guessing that you're going to be able to take in how important you are to all of us.
Yeah, well, that implies that entails that I am too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a harder sell, I know.
Of course it is.
Yeah,
but
it's good to for us just to stop and say, yeah, and you know, each one of us plays an important role in the well-being of all of the rest of us. So we're in it together,
right,
and happy
right.
about it.
Mm.
Yeah.
So thank you very, very much.
Thank
you. You and Michael and the whole Sangha.
All right. And now don't wait another year to check in, huh?
No, but Sherry, I had to have something to say. You know, I was kind of in a fog all the time. It was.
Yeah. Although it's
just recently it's happened that I. Well, it's like a fog that lifts very slowly.
Yes, it does. Yep.
And just this kind of this clarity, it's come kind of in a past month or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really didn't feel I had anything to say.
Yes, you didn't see that you had anything to say.
No.
Which is not the same as you didn't have anything to say.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree.
All right, good. Take good
Thank
care
you
of
very,
yourself.
Very much.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Thank you. Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Sure, that brings tears to my eyes.
I know. We're all so lucky, aren't we?
We are. We are very lucky, folks.
Yeah.
Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Hello, my name is John March, and I'm the leader of a music project called the Zen Blues Quartet. For the last few years, this collaboration of some of the best musicians in the world has been gathering to record and perform as a way of showing our gratitude and love for the music of the blues. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have two more callers here.
All right.
Okay, our next caller, would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Yes,
Hello.
You're on the air.
This is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Aha. Uh-huh. Is that better?
It is better.
Good. I think we had just a little snag in whatever space we're in.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm calling. I have this thing whenever I go on retreat that I tend to lose my keys.
Oh, ho. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and has it started already?
Yes. Only it's not just my keys. It's kind of all over the place.
Uh-huh. And what happens?
Well, it's just like I'll be going along and then chaos. It's chaos.
And do you lose the focus of your attention? Is that what produces the chaos, or does it actually feel like you're paying attention but the world around you has become chaotic?
Yes, it feels like I'm paying attention and the world around me becomes chaotic, and then it's always kind of a surprise.
Uh-huh. That the world becomes chaotic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know that I'm causing it. I mean, there's like a recognition of the Dharma that it's, you know, I'm causing it. It's
now,
not like
now,
something
wait,
external
wait, wait,
for me.
Wait. Now, how are you causing it? What kind of chaos are we talking about here?
Well, I cut my hand twice today.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not just once, but twice. And both times it was doing a task that I've done 200 times.
Okay. Now, of course, that would make me wonder if, in fact, you were not attentive.
Yes, but I think it goes deeper than that. Yes, yes, because it's like all of a sudden I am attentive when there's pain.
Yeah.
It's like
but
there's
right,
a whole
Right before, when that knife or whatever it was coming toward your finger, there wasn't anybody there noticing that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it feels kind of like it's a self-protective device, albeit an unproductive, no longer useful one.
Okay. Can you say how that would, I mean, I got the second part, but how would the first part work?
There's this real jittery nervousness, this
uh-huh.
anxiety that doesn't have any cause.
Uh-huh.
It's not attached to anything. It's just kind of this real pretty nervous. And I give it a cause.
So you're anxious, you're nervous.
Yeah.
And then you do something, and that gives a focus,
right?
If you will, for the anxiety.
It's
kind of an outlet for the anxiety.
Yeah.
Is that sort of what you're describing?
Yeah.
Uh huh. And so what I hear you saying is that you're suspecting that that's no longer the way you want to deal with anxiety.
Well, it doesn't really work.
Right.
And it's painful. You know, it's a waste of time and inefficient.
Right. But aside from that, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of understand, you know, kind of, I understand that understanding isn't the same thing as freedom.
Yes, you understand that this is not a particularly good or helpful pursuit, but that doesn't mean you can make a different choice.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And
right.
So what do you think would make the difference?
Well, I thought of calling tonight instead of just showing up on Saturday might help.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like I'm nervous about showing up on Saturday, so I'm showing up now.
And very good. And what are you nervous about?
It feels like survival.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it feels like it's on a really gut level.
Okay.
It's not concrete. It's not a grown-up kind of thing.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like it feels like a small child. Who is afraid.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a real feeling of doom, things falling apart.
Things falling apart.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so in that nervousness and that anxiety, then there's the doing something that kind of brings it to a head.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I kind of, you know, started noticing this tendency. It's like in preparing to go away for retreat, there's a heightened, you know, my days get very busy before I go.
Uh-huh.
Making sure everything's in order and all my clients are taken care of and that kind of thing. And normally in the past, it had gotten down to a pretty swift, smooth system. I make the phone calls that need to be made. I switch things around. And this time it's just been problem after problem, and it's not been easy.
Uh-huh. And are the problems part of what feel like the chaos?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I know that it's my projection, and it's like it's kind of you can't see what's not internal.
Uh-huh. And so if you were having it a different experience, then it wouldn't be a problem.
Yes.
In other words, somebody is perceiving this as a problem,
yes.
Somebody else.
And then I'm not capable of living up to my life experience.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I'm not really trying to survive. That's not my goal.
Right. Well, and of course, you know, as we know, ego is the only one who has survival concerns.
Yes.
Yeah, so, which is why ego gets very threatened when you're going to go on retreat.
Yes.
Yeah, because then it's afraid of what's going to happen during that time. But you surviving, you know, it's not actually the issue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I get that.
Mm-hmm. All right, good. So you get, bring a little conscious awareness to it before the countdown begins, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't call it good.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, I know I have a skewed view of life, of what's good and what's fun and what's happy.
And what's necessary.
And what's necessary, yeah. Because, again, you know, as our previous caller was indicating, you know, there's no happiness in that system. There's no getting it right, overcoming it, fixing, changing. Nothing is going to actually make a difference within that system. And so, of course, that system is fighting desperately to stay in control and like that. But
right.
It doesn't serve you. None of it serves you. The only
right.
thing that's going to serve you is being free of all of that.
Right. It's kind of like when I first started noticing this tendency of losing my keys and going into this frantic kind of place, it's like there was a tendency just to try harder.
Right. Right.
As opposed to kind of recognizing this is the pattern, this is what I do.
Yeah. Yes. This is ego attempting to get a survival thing going. So what I need to do is step back, calm down, take a few deep breaths, recognize what's going on, come back to center, get a little conscious, compassionate awareness going.
Yeah, that's what's missing is the compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it has been. Not anymore. Because that's what calling in is. Right? That's what calling in is bringing the compassion.
Yes. Yes. Like there's rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And things will get done.
Yeah. And they will be the way they are. And what will happen will happen. And the only, you know, there really isn't any control.
Yes.
But what we can do is be there. And that's the very best we can do.
And that's a lot.
And that's a lot. It's everything. It's everything.
Yes.
Well, all right then.
I'll
I reckon
see you
I'll see you in a little while then, huh? If you're going
yeah.
on retreat.
Yep, Saturday.
Saturday. All right.
Thank
it's
you, Sharon.
It's going to be fun. Yeah, you can tell them I said so.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, are you ready for the next caller?
I am.
Okay. Next caller, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Virginia from Washington State.
Hi, Virginia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, you?
I'm doing well.
All right.
Well, I called today. You know, I've been wanting to call you for the last few weeks, Sherry, and I feel like I get talked out of it just about every time. Conditioning has a convincing argument that, you know, I should know better than that, and, you know, I can work it out. I can figure it out if I just keep paying attention and
keep listening to its guidance.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then when I heard you and Michael having a conversation at a little bit before five about, you know, finding meaning, you know, having a meaningful direction and meaningful work, well, that's like one of the biggest issues that conditioning uses to clobber me with my life.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What does it say?
Well, it's about my job and it being meaningful or not meaningful, but it kind of like spreads out to my whole life, and it says things like the conversation is basically, you know, I hate my job, I need to find another job. Then it's, I hate my life. And then another voice says, well, when you get to center, you'll know what to do, and you're probably just missing a lot of opportunities because, you know, you need to live from a place of center, and then you'll see all the opportunities, and then you can just, you know, gracefully move to some other whatever. And then another voice says, well, we want to be enthusiastic about going to work every day, which, of course, I know that was part of the discussion. I can be enthusiastic, but then another voice says, well, that's too much to hope for. You just need to be with what is and be grateful for what you got, you know.
Just gut it out somehow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, these people have a lot of good ideas about how you should be in your life, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you know, it's like, and I think what I'm really realizing, that conversation then gets spread out to my whole life, you know, like, what's the use?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So instead of all of this being something that's going to bring hope to you, which is
right,
what it's meant to sound like, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It in fact just leads you to a place of there's just nowhere to go.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah, exactly. And I understood from the conversation, you know, I understand and part of me understands that, you know, the idea of bringing presence to everything is what, you know, awareness practice is about. And yet that's not my experience. And I guess what I'm saying is I'm kind of stuck around this.
Okay. So here's what I would like to know.
Okay.
What is the truth of all of this? In other words, is it the case that you have a perfectly good life that, you know, that you've picked out and you actually want, but the voices ruin it for you so successfully that you actually can't enjoy it?
Yeah.
Or
mm-hmm.
is it more the case that, in fact, it's not the life that you want, but you're just left in this place of needing to stay in it and do it because the voices won't let you do anything else?
Yeah. You know, I've kind of asked myself that same question, and I'm a little suspicious that my life has been directed by what I think I should do instead of what I would like to do. And I know, like the previous caller, I feel like I have a sub-personality that's really intent on survival and kind of would do anything to keep the status quo because of survival.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay. And so if all things were equal, you could
mm-hmm.
do it any way you wanted to do it, what would you do?
Well, I'd probably work independently, like work either for myself in some kind of teaching context or, I'd probably be some kind of independently working person, either like a in creative arts like writing or photography, or I'd lead bicycle trips. You know, I'd do something a little bit more adventurous than what I'm doing now.
Okay. And
mm-hmm.
is that a possibility for you?
Well, I mean, I guess there's. It depends on who answers the question, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So who's going to answer the question?
Yeah.
So, for instance, let's be more specific.
Okay.
So you would do something like lead bicycle trips.
Yeah, like I'd have a little eco tour thing or something. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And, of course, that could work nicely with writing and photography.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Because those would all go nicely together. Mm-hmm. So is it a possibility that you could do some of that?
Yes, it is definitely a possibility I could do some of it.
Okay. So voices of conditioning set it up for us that it's all or nothing at all.
Yeah.
And very quickly, of course, like to move to nothing at all. So unless you can do that all the time, perfectly.
Right.
100%, making more money than you've ever
mm-hmm.
made in your life,
mm-hmm.
people adoring you every step of the way, it's not going to work.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so often the case, and the reason that, as I've said to people any number of times, I'm so passionate about books that we've done, like Making a Change for Good,
mm-hmm.
Because we have to get practice into our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to. We cannot, you know, we all understand it intellectually, but if we're not making movement every day
mm-hmm.
Toward conscious awareness, conscious compassionate awareness, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So it's getting set up to me, the approach that I would wish for you is
mm-hmm.
that you decide how this could work.
Hmm.
So maybe you plan your first eco bike trip
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you advertise it and you rope your family and friends into it or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
And you do that to see what happens.
Okay.
Because from conditioning's perspective, it only counts if you're successful in these really specific ways that you're probably actually never going to achieve.
Right.
Right? Because
yeah.
it mm-hmm. turns it into how much money it makes and, you know, how many magazines are publishing your
right.
whatever it is and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But really what you want is enthusiasm and excitement and fun in your life.
That's
what I suggest.
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah. And
mm-hmm.
so you can definitely get that
mm-hmm.
While doing, you know, a regular job
mm-hmm.
that offers you the things that I think you probably also want,
mm-hmm.
like money and
mm-hmm.
A little bit of security and that sort of thing. And then you try out this other,
mm-hmm.
And the other is the thing that puts, you know, gives you the juice.
Yeah, right.
Adds the fun and the excitement and the adventure. And so slowly you see how conditioning stops you, not from doing, I don't believe for a second that conditioning is trying to stop us from doing what we want to do. It's
mm-hmm.
trying to stop us from enjoying our lives.
Yeah. Oh, that really rings true.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you don't believe conditioning wants to stop us from doing what we want to do.
Right. That's just a way to make you unhappy.
I see. Okay.
You see?
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, whatever the content is, the content that conditioning is going to use is whatever content you'll buy into.
So if I loved my job, conditioning might be saying, you need to leave your job.
It's not spiritual enough.
Right.
you're not really doing anything spiritual. And
right.
that's what you should be focused on.
Mm-hmm.
You should be doing more service. That's
mm-hmm.
that's what you should be doing. Not this. Yeah, I mean, it's great that you love your job, but it's not the point to love your job.
Right. Okay.
And you can hear it easily.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that would be my encouragement. And I think it would just be grand fun if you would, you know, take on a little experiment like that.
Lay
out your steps. You know, if you can afford a coach, you know, that is a great addition to something like this.
A life coach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I even have one I could suggest if you need one.
Sure, I'd be. I'd be interested. Sure.
Okay, we do a process every year called Best Year Yet.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, and Jan Letender, who does that with us, is a coach.
Okay.
And a phenomenal coach at that. And so to have someone like that to give you the support, because that's the missing piece for us.
Yeah.
You know, we start out and then those voices just beat us down.
Mm-hmm.
So to have the support for taking the steps and moving in that direction,
mm-hmm.
be a very good thing.
That sounds great, Sherry. Thank you so much. And
yeah.
I'm just really.
And you're doing it for the enjoyment.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm writing it down, because that's what's going to need to be my focus, because you're absolutely right. You know, conditioning absolutely tells me, you know, I'm doing it for the money, I'm doing it whatever, like you said, for the fame, I'm doing it for all kinds of reasons that
are just not true.
Yeah, not true and not necessary, but probably will never happen. So of course, then why do it?
Right. Yes, if this is not going to lead you directly to the Oprah Winfrey Show,
right.
Why bother?
It's so great, Sherry. I mean, I'm so grateful that I was able to call in and talk to you, and that you and Michael, you know, are offering the show, because, you know, I could have sat here for a long time trying to figure it out, and just getting deeper and deeper into the, you know, the different stories and.
Yep.
So I'm grateful just to be able to bring it out to the light and say it and get your response and you know, have a direction. But even if you hadn't given me any direction, just to be able to bring it out is a relief.
Oh, yeah. You just having somewhere to go and talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And all I do, you know, I say, well, blah, 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 blah. And then you go off and, you know, you do what you do and you see what you see. And then we can talk again and you do what you do and see what you see. And over time, you know, as they say, all will be revealed, and the practice will deepen, and you'll just move to different places and see more and more, and it's good.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you.
And thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Virginia. Sherry, I just have to say amen, sister, to that one.
Amen. It's a great thing, isn't it?
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing. Yeah, it's a great joy for me to participate in the show.
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful way to be with people. And, you know, it's so, well, that's kind of been a little theme of our show tonight, right? It's because those voices, in the same way that they want to, you know, talk a person out of doing what's going to make her or him happy in life, they try to talk us out of calling in on the show or going on retreat or doing a workshop or anything that's going to bring about those kinds of changes in our lives that, you know, give us a shot at having the lives that really, I would say, I would go so far as to say we are meant to have.
Wow. That's powerful. Sherry, we have about 5 minutes left and we have one more caller.
All right.
Next caller, would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Christina out of San Francisco.
Hey, Christina. How
Hello.
Are you?
Hello.
Long time no see.
Yeah, true. Huh? I missed you guys. I have a question. It's funny. I was going to say, I have a practical question, but I bet you anything it's about practice. So looking for guidance, there's a chance that someone I know is going to go to the monastery for the first time, and then it turns out someone else I know might go on the same retreat, and they just came up and told me, I don't know them very well, they just read There's Nothing Wrong With You because I told them it was an important book, and they read it, and they said, I'm going to go on this retreat probably. And how do I keep, I don't know, boundaries or take care of myself or keep the privileged environment? Or I guess I'm just like, I'm been wondering, like, I think I'm going to not talk about the monastery at all to them. Just say, oh, have fun, the end. wondering about like that, the privileged environment, and then what if people I know start going?
Okay, so let me see if I'm following you. Are there two concerns? One, the privileged environment, and two, sort of people are now kind of doing your thing.
Yeah, I've always wondered about. I've always been like, this is my thing.
Uh-huh.
But then I've always thought, this thing is so special, I really want to share it.
Uh-huh.
And
but
I
then
don't...
it gets a little threatening when everybody starts
yes.
doing it, and then it's their thing too.
Yeah.
And then they're going to have their opinions
exactly.
and experience.
And then what if they come back and say, I really want to talk about my experience of whatever at the monastery, and I don't think that'd be something for me to do.
Right. Well, of course, that's something that I really encourage people not to do.
Uh-huh.
And which, you know, if you want to, you could draw upon. You know, that is our guidance, that we don't...
Or we don't even talk about it at all.
Yeah. And if somebody does want to talk about it, now, in case that sounds strange to somebody, simply because there's a danger of conditioning getting a hold of something that we say, and then, we can interfere with somebody's ability to do the practice, to stay with the practice, that sort of thing. So not socializing with people who also do the practice, or if they're friends, and of course you're going to socialize with your friends, then don't make practice a part of it.
Yeah, I find I don't even really like to talk about my practice at all socially. That's what I've been running into for a long. Like, I'll mention this is something that's important to me, but I actually don't like. I used to be an insight junkie, and I couldn't stop talking about it. And then one day I was like, "Oh, this is an addiction, and I don't like it." So I guess part of me, whoever's here, is worried like I can't control myself, and I'm going to say, "Oh, what did you think of da 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 da?"
Yeah.
And not even the exercise, just like, "What did you learn?" Or, "Isn't it great?" You know.
And you know, if you do, you do. If that happens, it happens. It's not, it's not something that you would intend to do. But if you have a little unconscious moment, a little lapse, and that happens, you know, you can always come back later and say, you know, I just realize I never feel really good when I just talk about something that to me is an experience. So could
really
we just make a little agreement here that that's not what we're going to do, and we'll just, you know, if we want to share a practice experience, we can both go on retreat at the same time with an agreement not to talk about it afterwards. So, you know, not to make a hard and fast rule for yourself that's just going to lead to suffering.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks.
And thanks for sending your friends along.
Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah, it's good to, you know, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Because even though, you know, you have these little hurdles about, conversation and socializing around practice and all that sort of thing, it is wonderful to have more and more people in one's life be people who are paying attention and waking up.
Right. Okay. So I'm kind of wondering if ego has been like, don't tell anyone about it because you're going to do something really unconscious and destroy your practice.
Yeah.
Or that's what it's been whispering to me, which...
Yeah. Which is probably not the case.
Right. Because it's just a subtle way of, stop practicing.
Mm-hmm.
Stop getting other people to practice.
Or make it such an isolating thing that after a while the voices are going to say, why would you want to do this? It's horrible. It's ruining your life.
Nobody understands it.
Nobody understands. You don't get to talk to anybody. You're all alone. You're isolated. It's too weird. I don't want to do it anymore. You have to say, oh, yeah, I kind of agree.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, thank you.
Have a good evening. Thank you,
guys. All right. Thanks. You too. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Christina. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it says 6 o'clock.
Wow. It just flies, doesn't it?
It
Where
just
have
flies.
I heard that before?
Just flies. Yeah. Another fun show.
Yeah. And the next time I talk to you, it will be from the beautiful mountains of North Carolina.
Oh, great.
Yes. Maybe I'll even drag in Mr. McKay
Oh, great.
To give us an in-person update on his Zambian adventures.
That would be fun.
Yeah. So we'll look forward to that.
Yes. Thanks so much, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.